Clerk will call the docket. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Sarah Hensley, and I represent the Board of Supervisors of Fairfax County in this matter. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
Three?
Yes, please, Your Honor.
All right.
The issue before this Court today is whether Virginia Code Section 15.2-2307D protects uses that were illegal from their inception. It does not. Because the trial court had to ignore the plain language of this section of the code to rule in the Cone's favor, and because the trial court fashioned a remedy for the code for the Cones that is simply not authorized by statute, its decision should be reversed. I assume Your Honors are conversant with the facts of the record, but I'm happy to address them if you'd like. Turning first to the plain language of the statute then. Paragraph D of 15.2-2307 addresses buildings and structures. It provides that if certain conditions are met, then those buildings and structures are not subject to removal. Unlike paragraphs A, B, and C of 15.2-2307, it does not address uses. And it stands in stark contrast to paragraph C, which provides that buildings and structures and the uses thereof are subject to certain protections. We know from this that if the General Assembly intended to protect the uses of the buildings and structures and not just the structures themselves, the General Assembly knows how to use that language. For this court to uphold the trial court's decision and rule in the Cone's favor, it has to ignore the phrase and the uses thereof in paragraph C and read that phrase into paragraph D. And our rules of statutory construction simply do not permit this. If the General Assembly had wanted the statute to include the uses thereof, as I just said, it would have included that language. If it wanted merely to protect buildings and structures, it would have had to do exactly what it did, which is omit that language. And the county is not seeking a remedy from the Cones that isn't authorized by the statute. The county has asked the Cones to remove the kitchens and wiring and plumbing that were illegally installed in their garden house and garage, and that turned what was a garden house and garage into two illegal dwelling units. If Your Honors have any questions about plain language, I'm happy to address them. Otherwise, I will move on. Thank you. Just last month, this court decided Prince William County Board of Supervisors versus Archie. And in that case, this court reminded us that for a right to vest, it had to at some point be lawful. And this court cited Board versus Boer and Dick Kelly Enterprises for that principle that a vested right has to be lawful at its inception. In this particular case, Your Honors, the use of the garden house and garage as illegal dwellings has never been lawful under the zoning ordinance. The zoning ordinance, the Cone's property is zoned R1, which means one residential unit per acre. And Article 2-501 of the zoning ordinance limits a dwelling unit to one per lot. The Cone's use, therefore, has never been legal. And because it has never been legal, it never vested. And there simply can't be protection in 15.2-2307 for a use that was never lawful. And to rule that way, Your Honors, you would have to defy decades of case law.
Well, it is possible, of course, for a statutory scheme to provide more protection to non-vested rights that find themselves in whatever capacity inconsistent with present or later zoning laws. So, I mean, it's not impossible to conceive of a statute doing that. I think your point is more narrow, which is this one doesn't.
Correct, Your Honor. Absolutely. This one, it would be possible that this one does not. Do Your Honors have further questions? If not, I would ask that this court grant the board's appeal and reverse the decision of the trial court. Thank you.
All right.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name's Meg Marks, and I'm counsel for appellees Douglas and Catherine Cohn. I'd like to use my time this morning to briefly address three points that we raised in our brief but I think should be stressed. First, I'd like to address the substantial change that took place in the statute in 2008 that brings us here today to interpret that language. Second, I'd like to address the language in subsection D of section 2307 and explain to the court why that language protects the Cohn's use here. Lastly, I'd like to address language in subsections of section 2307 to show that the county's interpretation cannot be correct. Starting with the 2008 change, we agree that prior to July 1st, 2008, the case law supported the interpretation that section 2307 applied to prior permissible uses only. However, on July 1st, 2008, there was a major change to Section 2307. And I'd like to direct the court to page 6 of the county's reply brief. There, the county correctly points to prior case law, which held that Section 2307 provides for a vesting of permissible use of property and not a vesting of impermissible use of property. The county then, in its reply brief, states, in amending the statute in 2008 to add language in paragraph D, the General Assembly extended similar protection to buildings and structures that, by permit or by taxation, had received a locality's approval. So again, the county's own summary of the addition in 2008 is that by amending the statute, the General Assembly extended similar protection to buildings and structures that, by permit or taxation, received locality approval.
Okay, but not uses, right? I mean, because the county's whole point is, look, a garage or a shed or something like that, or an addition that's illegal, that's one thing. I mean, you can see that from the street, presumably. But a use, I mean, you have to know what's going on inside. County can't really figure that out, generally speaking.
And thank you for the question. The county makes two main arguments. The first argument that the county makes is that this cannot apply to a use that was not previously permissible. And that's the language I was citing that the county was correct on. We agree with their summary that there was a change in the language in 2008 that changes it from it has to be permissible to it has to be improved in one of these two ways.
So now, your argument is that subsection D of 2307 means that uses are included because of a reply brief statement, even though the entire argument of the county is that it's not included?
No, and I'm sorry if I was unclear on that. I'm saying our position on, we appear to agree with the county, given their language, that it no longer only applies to uses, to buildings and structures, which I'd like to address this question, that includes uses, but that it doesn't exclude buildings and structures that used to be nonconforming. I'll call that argument one, and that's the argument I was addressing. But getting to the use section, that's obviously something.
Well, they're not asking to tear the buildings down or take them away, so why does it matter that they conceded that D says what D says?
Well, Section D has language that the trial court found the prerequisite was met in the taxes being paid. So the question before this court is use included in building and structure? And our argument is it is, and you can read it that way by reading Section D on its own, as well as reading the rest of the section. So,
well, why don't you start with Section D and show us where use is somewhere mentioned in there, or at least implied.
So Section D's first sentence is, notwithstanding any local ordinance to the contrary, if, Romanet 1, the local government has issued a building permit, the building or structure was thereafter constructed in accordance with the building permit, and upon completion of construction, the local government issued a certificate of occupancy or a use permit, therefore, or, Romanet 2, the owner of the building or structure has paid taxes to the locality for such building or structure for a period of more than the previous 15 years, zoning ordinance shall not provide that such building or structure is illegal and subject to removal solely to such nonconformity. So the county says that doesn't say use, so it only deals with physical structures. Our position is it doesn't limit it to physical structures, so it can't be read to limit it to physical structures.
So the language is, a zoning ordinance shall not provide that such building or structure, can be ordered to be removed. Okay, well, they're not asking anyone to remove the building or the structure.
They are asking that our use be declared illegal. And under the statute, our position is that you cannot separate a building from a use, that they are the same thing. So this
But of course you can. I mean, if you use something as a business or as a residence or as a separate additional residence, that's completely different from just having a garage or a shed. I mean, I have a shed where I store my, you know, lawnmower or whatever. Well, I start using it as an apartment or a business or a bar or something like that. I mean, that's completely different.
But that's not articulated within here. And this section throughout it does not use, unfortunately, it's been amended a lot over the years, there's been a lot of hands involved in the drafting, and it doesn't use the same uniformity throughout about when they mean use and when they use building. The Fairfax local ordinance defines building, bear with me one second, but it defines a building in 20-11. As a structure used or intended for supporting or sheltering any use or occupancy. They're not separated. And when you look at section C...
A structure to support any use. So a structure to have lawnmowers or a structure to have a leasehold interest.
And our position is that the two are equated within the statute. When we look at the last...
Wait, can you see this case, it seems... In the grand scheme of things, harmless enough. I mean, you just have extra people living there, so maybe there's a little less parking on the street or whatever. I don't know what this physical setup is. But you can see from the county's perspective, if someone has a illegal bar, strip club, slaughterhouse, I mean, you name it. So on the one hand, we have a fact pattern that's not especially troublesome. But you could see from the county's perspective, if we start saying, oh, well, you've been doing this for a long time, and you've been good about being covert about it, and that just vests, and you're just out of luck, county. So, but that seems like a pretty big change for the General Assembly to grandfather that in versus simply the structure itself.
And in that scenario, if they were paying taxes for it as a slaughterhouse, I would think that if the county's going to take taxes for it as a slaughterhouse, then the county's got to stand by the terms the general legislature put in.
Even if a slaughterhouse has always been illegal, is illegal, and then for the foreseeable future will remain illegal.
Under the terms of the statute, if the taxes have been assessed, and again, tax assessments are based on use, and the trial court found that the taxes that were paid constituted qualification under this statute. And so... Yes, under this scenario, we are entitled to protection for our use. And again, if you look at the statute as a whole, it's clear that the language is not uniform and that they're interchangeable throughout.
Is the taxation really that fine-grained? I mean, so it's when we've seen these cases where they do the periodic reassessment, it seems like it's a very broad brush approach that these localities use because they, you know, they have thousands or millions of structures that they're evaluating for tax purposes. They can't possibly know what's going on inside each one of them. So is it really the case that, in fact, the county can be charged with a knowledge of, oh, you know what's going on inside each of these, and because you're paying taxes on them, you just take your medicine now and accept the uses that's going on inside the structure?
That issue was presented to the trial court, and the trial court did find that the burden is on the county.
To do what?
To stand by their assessments that they issue.
What if it's a use that doesn't affect value?
Well, the full use is considered in their real estate taxes. And again, this isn't before this court, but to the extent you're asking questions about it, these residences were marked as dwellings on the zoning plat going back 30 years. These
They weren't marked as dwellings. I thought they were marked as a garage and as a garden house.
And had
and their building permits said that that's what they were.
That is what they were, but they marked the rooms, and in some places they were marked as a dwelling. So these taxes were paid not in some covert illegal use that was being hidden, but a use that when they purchased the property was already being used.
If we're going to go beyond statutory language and just argue equities, all right, so you were taxed for a dwelling for umpteen years. You used it as a dwelling for umpteen years. Where's the widows and orphans argument now?
Well, I think it's two-point. I think that the similarities between this and the doctrine of adverse possession should be acknowledged. I think the period of 15 years is important, and the stability it gives to land titles, and I think that's a big policy behind why this was added. I would also like to address a potential hypothetical that maybe will illustrate the issue a little bit more clearly.
You can't get adverse possession for an illegal use. Even under adverse possession law, you can't do that.
Well, adverse possession is an example of when an owner can get a use vested that was not lawful from the beginning or was not recorded from the beginning.
So there's broad conceptual similarity. Basically.
Absolutely, and I don't think that's a similarity. I think the 15-year period, I think it's important to note, and I think that's why this subsection was added. It's a different beast from the rest of the subsection. In that
well, respect. I found it interesting because you can't get adverse possession against the Commonwealth anyway, can you? You can't adversely possess public land.
And maybe there's a sovereign immunity exception to the Commonwealth, but I think the policies are the same behind it. I think the similarities are there.
We get it. It's a broad similarity. But, okay.
Let me address one hypothetical to the court that will hopefully illustrate the problem that we foresee a little bit more with the section, the first sentence of subsection D. And that talks about Romanet 1, if you get a building permit, you build it and you get a use permit, or Romanet 2, if you pay taxes, and then the argument is, what's the relief for Romanet 1 and Romanet 2? We say it includes use, the county doesn't. So under the county's interpretation, we take the example of a property zone for 10 lots. And in rezoning, it's proffered for no more than 9 lots, which often happens. The records get lost, or something's misinterpreted, the land sits there for a while, and a new owner comes along and obtains building permits for 10 lots, builds 10 lots, and gets occupancy permits for 10 lots. Under that scenario, the county would ask that the 10th house sit there vacant, because the structure can stay, but the use cannot. And that can't be what the General Assembly intended. And I think that scenario illustrates that Romanet 1 and Romanet 2, I think the county acknowledges that Romanet 1 talks about use. We would argue Romanet 2 also talks about use, and therefore the relief has to talk about use as well. The last sentence of Section C, which I think it's important to look at the full statute to try and understand what the legislature was intending, says further, a zoning ordinance may provide that no nonconforming use may be expanded, or that no nonconforming building or structure may be moved on the same lot or to any other lot, which is not properly zoned to permit such nonconforming use. That last phrase, such nonconforming use, that's referring back to the phrase nonconforming buildings and structures. So
in your hypothetical, the 10th dwelling house, which can't be used as a dwelling because it was improperly zoned to begin, is there no safety valve in the zoning ordinances that allow for this, the municipality to make an exception for things like that? Because if that hypothetical does have a certain ring of inequity to it, whereas yours, I don't think, has any. Because it's a dwelling house, you can use it as a garden house. It's a garage, you can use it as a garage. But if you have built a dwelling based upon a permit or years of paying taxes, only for one use, and then you get chopped off at the knees, there's got to be some remedy. I'm asking you, isn't there some remedy available for the for a special use permit or something that would exempt those true hardship cases?
I'm not aware of a specific one, and I think that this language has to be read to include that.
But wouldn't the occupancy certificate be a significant affirmative governmental act that you could use to create a vested right to use that temp house?
I see my time is up.
No, go right ahead and answer the question.
Yes, I think an occupancy permit is an affirmative step of the government, and I think taxation is an affirmative step of the government as well. And so under that subsection, they have to be read to permit the uses. And I would end by noting that I've cited Dillon's rule. If there's any doubt about, reasonable doubt about the interpretation, it has to be ruled in the Cone's favor and against the power of the government.
All right. Thank you very much. Rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just a few points. With regards to the hypothetical, 15.2-2307C protects that use. In that instance, an occupancy permit issued for the use of the dwelling, provided that the dwelling was consistently used as a dwelling, 15.2-2307C and the county zoning ordinance would have protected that use, so the hypothetical wouldn't happen. I'd like to address taxation. We had another assignment of error which was not granted related to taxation. But to be clear, the evidence before the Board of Zoning Appeals indicated that the first time the Department of Tax Administration became aware that these units were being used as dwelling units was in 2008, which isn't 15 years. And at that time, it indicated that one of the properties, I believe it was the Garden House, was not occupied. So it wasn't until 2010 that the tax records indicated that there were three dwelling units on the property, and that wasn't communicated to the zoning folks at that time. But more importantly and more fundamentally, Your Honors, the Constitution of Virginia and the case law of this court require that tax assessment be at fair market value. And that means what a willing buyer would pay a willing seller. Well, a willing buyer would have reviewed the zoning ordinance and would have been aware that the additional dwelling units on the property were illegal, so it wouldn't be part of the property's value, and the only value to the willing buyer for those additional structures would be as a garden house and a garage. So the taxation protection protects the structures, and we are not asking the Cones to remove those structures.
I'm just trying to figure out how the locality, I mean, unless you want Big Brother to be ferreting out what you're doing inside your house all the time, or to, you know, come in at reassessment time in every single structure and figure out, well, are you doing something illegal? I mean, it's just practically speaking, I don't see how that would work. And then to say, well, you have this illegal slaughterhouse, nip joint, you know, strip club, whatever it is, okay, well, we're going to increase your taxes because obviously you have this illegal profitable venture here on your property. I'm just trying to know, how would that even work for the county?
Well, taxation does generally require rely on sales in the area, and also if work for a house is permitted, we might ask to go and inspect the house to see if the value has increased. But your point is well taken, because I'd like to go back to the example of a slaughterhouse or some other seedier business use. And those uses would require a business license. And the General Assembly has protected those types of uses in 15.2-2307C. And what does it provide there? It says if you have a business license for a use and you've paid taxes for that use and 15 years occurred, and you pay taxes consistently, your protection is that you don't have fees charged for you for rezoning or a special permit. Your protection isn't that the use gets to continue.
Isn't the protection in D, even with the payment of taxes, that you can't tell them to tear it down?
Exactly, Your Honor. And to be clear, we are not asking that. But I'd also like to address whether there is harmlessness in this particular case. Fairfax County enforces its zoning ordinance on a complaint basis, and we've received complaints from the neighbors, which is how we discovered these illegal dwelling units. And I was reviewing the record yesterday, and there were several emails and communications with the Board of Zoning Appeals expressing unhappiness about the Cones' illegal use of their property. But what's unique about the situation is that the primary complainant is a neighbor who has, because the garage and garden house weren't built in accordance with building permits, the garage is practically on top of the neighbor's property. And the main dwelling unit for this property is far away from the garage. So while the Cones don't have to deal with having two dwelling units on their property, they're far enough and isolated away from the Cones, the neighbors have that use directly next to them. And these are large lots in McLean. So you can imagine the frustration of the neighbors to think they're moving in next to a garage and instead have a continual or intermittent occupancy of random tenants. If your honors have any additional questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, I would simply reiterate my request that the trial court's decision be reversed.
All right, thank you. Call the next case.